Welcome into the DNVR Rockies podcast brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code DNVR, make your first deposit, and get a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's promo code DNVR only at DraftKings Sportsbook. I am Patrick Lyons.
I am Susie Hunter. And guys, check it out. It is a hashtag Bernie Boy Summer. We have Winter Bernard of the Albuquerque Isotopes here with us today. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it. I like the little intro song. I was about to start rapping on that.
Do you do a little freestyling on the side there? Is that a hobby of yours?
I was doing it in my head.
Okay.
Okay. So in the off season, we're gonna have you do that. You're gonna make a rap for our show, and that would be amazing.
100% in.
Yes.
You're very talented. I mean, there's almost nothing you can do there. You cannot do so.
Thanks, Patrick.
I think that's fitting. You're a two-time guest now of the DNVR Rockies podcast.
I know.
You're an elite company already.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, I haven't seen that episode because it was before I existed here. I didn't know. Now I know. I'm going to have to go back and look for it.
That's it. I mean, we packed a lot. We went down the rabbit hole. We did Family Feud. We did talking about the Stolen Base Club, and you know, we got to get Ricky Henderson linked up with you somehow.
Yeah,
there was a lot that we unpacked there. For that, what's funny is, so when I was getting ready for the show, picking out my outfit, what kind of shirt do I want to go with, and I remembered I haven't in a while worn this certain Isotope shirt from 5 years ago, and it was like the 15th anniversary of the lab. Which made me think, like, wow, that ballpark is 20 years old down there in Albuquerque. And does that surprise you to hear that it's 20 years old?
It is kind of crazy. I mean, Dave Stewart came the other day, and I was like, Dave Stewart pitched here? You know what I mean? I was like, wow. It does surprise me, though. But it's so nice, though. You know, they did a good job upkeeping it. And, I mean, there's fans at every single game. So it's surprising that it is that old.
Yeah, such a beautiful facility that they've built there, and I hope when you were talking with Dave Stewart, did you get Ricky Henderson's number from him? I mean, that was your shot right there.
I did not. I didn't get his number. I know, but I had a good combo with him. He was actually my former agent, so it was good to catch up with him. And then I think he was in Albuquerque. It was before the stadium was obviously built, but it was pretty cool to hear the stories, like how he played here. And I told him that my brother went to UNM. He's like, I knew that. So pretty good stuff.
That's amazing.
Yeah, the baseball family and community is so small in that way, where you might be meeting someone for the first time, but they know about you, and you know, you've looked up to that person. That's been a cool thing for you. I imagine that you've been experiencing a lot here, because people are paying attention to the Winton Bernard story, and everyone here in Denver's is pulling for you and rooting for you. How much has that love, you know, not only just trickled down from Denver to Albuquerque, but the fans in Albuquerque in supporting not just the team, but you in particular, because, you know, you're very much a fan favorite.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, my neighbor came up to me yesterday. She's like, I heard you hit a grand slam. And I was like, where'd you hear that from? And she's like, well, I was walking my dog in the park, and some random guy was telling me how he went to an Isotopes game. And then she's like, you need to know about this guy, Winton Bernard. He had a grand slam last night. He's having a great year. And she's like, well, that's my neighbor. And she started bragging about me. So it's pretty cool, like, just to hear those stories. And like you said, around the ballpark, everybody's been super supportive. And I've connected with a couple kids that are going to be following me, and they continue to follow me. So I think that's the best part, is being around the kids.
Is there anything that feels better than hitting a grand slam?
Nothing. Absolutely not. That was the second one I've hit in my whole life. And the first one I hit, it was in Double A Tennessee. I was rounding the bases, and I was so excited. It was the first one I ever hit. I jumped in the air around third base, and then I like tumbled. It was so funny. I was on ESPN and everything for it. And then this was my second one. And it felt just as good. It's just like, you know, it's the biggest hit in baseball, especially where I think it was the fourth inning. Like, it was a pretty big situation. So to come up for the team like that was huge.
I love that. Did you think at some point when you were rounding third base, like, oh man, I got to top this. I got, This is my second shot at being on ESPN. You do a backflip, front flip. Like, was there any thought of like, how do I amp it up? Or again, you're AAA guy looking to make the bridge to the majors. You just got to act like you've been there before. Cause hey, literally you have.
I know, right? I was like, don't trip.
That would be me if I were ever in that situation. We had a home run derby amongst like our company a couple of weeks ago, and like just hitting one on a blitz ball was like a huge deal for me.
See? Another feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same thing. We're right. The same.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, so this season, you know, you guys have been playing, you know, really solid, and you've been there for, you know, a lot of these guys. We're starting to see some of the players from AA come up there to AAA. You, obviously, defense, incredibly strong there. No plays up on the hill just yet, right? I don't think I've seen any highlights yet.
But nothing too exciting yet. Nothing like I had last year. But, I mean, I have had my fair share of plays, but they've been almost like a little bit more routine. Or they look routine, you know?
Do you ever, like, you know, during batting practice or whatever, you know, take a look at the opposing team going up there to, like, marvel at it and look at it and, like, you know, grimace, scratch their head and talk with some of the other players of, like, seriously, what is this thing out the Taupe Slope in center field? Like, have you encountered other players and kind of their frustration with it, for lack of a better term, because it's challenging to play?
It is. You can see it, too, on their faces, because the pitcher's mad. And then the center fielder get mad that they don't catch the ball. No, like, huge conversations, but conversations with my teammates. You know, a lot of the infielders or the pitchers will go out during BP, and they'll stand in center field to see how it is. And then I think they have a lot of respect for me or whoever's playing center. Like, these are some tough plays, you know. And they try to catch them during P. Guys are falling. So I'm used to it now, but it definitely took a while to get used to.
Now, I know this hill exists, but why does it exist? Do we know why?
Great question. We don't. I think it's absolutely just for the look. But the
for
rumor
the aesthetic?
Going away next year. Yeah, I think it's just for like the look of the field, make it unique.
Wait, did you say that it's going away next year?
That's on the rumor mill.
Oh, wow. Okay. We had not heard that rumor yet. All right. This is good.
I talked to the ground crew that it's, well, I think MLB is taking it away. You know how they're changing everything next year and like a lot of the minor league ballparks? I think they're adding like more weight rooms, or they're doing something, and then the field has to be completely safe. So it's kind of a safety hazard.
I could see nice. A huge hill in the middle of your field, a safety hazard. This is new information.
Right.
Wow. That's pretty wild too. And they're letting you know now while you're still playing there. Oh no. Finish out this string of games there, Winton. It's totally unsafe. We're going to fix it next year, but you're still here. So you got to deal with it. Like what gives?
What is that? Exactly. And let me tell you guys, there's been like three or four times where I've literally fell, just ate it, looking embarrassed and everything, just because it's tough. It's so steep, and a lot of people don't realize that. And so you're so concentrated on the ball that you forget how steep it is.
Wow. It might be harder to catch a fly ball if they put the weight room out in center field now, going through all the equipment. Yeah, maybe I got an old Yankee Stadium on my brain where they used to have the monuments out there. But then if every ballpark has that in center field, I mean, now you've got an advantage because you've done it already.
Exactly.
Wow. Folks, you heard it here first. The hill, we may be saying goodbye to it. We would need to go do a whole tribute if that is what's happening. A funeral.
For sure.
That's amazing.
Hey, Carl Kaufman's on the hill for you guys tonight, Tuesday night. How nice has he been since coming up from the Hartford Yard Goats?
Man, I was talking to Jimmy the other day. And he was playing left field. I was like, does his stuff always move this much? Like, geez, his slider, and I guess it's his two-seamer. Everything's moving. So, man, he's good. He's going to be really, really special. Good pitcher.
Yeah, I imagine you guys don't always know the backstory on all your teammates and stuff, but he had to get shut down immediately once he was drafted in 2019, and then 2020, obviously everyone lost a season. So he had 2 years where he didn't play. He made his debut in Double A last year and was challenged. So it's good to hear that his stuff has been so effective. Has like a 1 ERA since he's been called up. That's been fantastic. You got your 23 stolen bases in, 2 caught stealings. How much do those 2 caught stealings keep you up at night? Or have you figured out how to put those things out of your head? Because, again, you're a whiz on the base path.
Yeah, obviously, I mean, one of the situations, it was really, really my fault. It's a situation where I probably shouldn't have went, but I was antsy to go. You know, you get hungry out there. You want to win. You want to compete. You want to get to the next base every time. And the first one really bothers me because we were playing against Sugarland. And that was another big situation where I really needed to get in scoring position. I think it was a tie ball game. And I was out just by this much. So anytime you get caught, I mean, obviously it's in the back of your head, but you work on ways to improve. So actually during the All-Star break on my last day, I worked with one of my friends and we just went over like the proper footwork. And I told him, I was like, hey, I've got caught a couple times, but I want to, you know, keep this thing rolling. So we worked on a couple things and I think it's going to help me for the second half. But like you said, it does eat at me, man. Like, you know, you got to forget about it, but at the same time, you want to, I mean, who doesn't want to be perfect in the game? You can't be perfect, but you want to be.
I mean, as someone who's never gotten over anything ever, I can appreciate that. So I get it.
We're twins.
I'm right there with you.
It's funny how when you look up and down a coaching staff, there's all kinds of different jobs. There's like quality assurance now, but there's never any base running coaches like specifically for that. And you think, again, the hitting coach, first base coach, whatever kind of has that. At the same time, you know, do players, you know, actively come up to you, your teammates, to say like, you know, pick up those things? I mean, I imagine, again, with your experience, and not just ability level, but experience, you know, you're almost like a coach out there for guys. Do they come up to you and try to pick your brain a little bit about some of those intricacies and details and being a successful base stealer?
Yeah, for sure. I know me and Ryan Vallade, we have a couple conversations about it. I know Coco just asked me recently, he's like, how do you slide? Because I actually learned it from my manager pointed out that Terrence Gore would do it. He goes in the base so hard. And it's kind of like at the last second, but he doesn't lose speed. So a lot of guys slide really early. And I think I used to do that early in my career. I would slide so early that I would lose speed. So I kind of learned a way to like, it's almost like a pop-up slide, but I go in really, really hard, but I don't lose speed. So like teaching those guys just like the little nuances that they had never heard before. And I had never heard before a couple of years ago. I'm thankful that, you know, my manager pointed it out, but any little thing, because there's so many bang bang plays in baseball, like any little thing could help you. But I like helping the guys out when they ask.
Yeah, I imagine it too. When you're sliding, you're putting the brakes on, and you don't want to come to a complete stop immediately when you reach second base when you're sliding. To your point, you kind of want to still be at your normal full speed on the slide when you hit the bag. So maybe you're holding on to it for dear life. How has that transition been? You know, from essentially 2019 to 2021, where they went with those bigger bases. Has that been easier for your game and in stealing bases in that late slide?
You know, what's weird is like, I had this briefly in indie ball too, but I don't really notice a big difference. I mean, just for stealing bases. So I can't really tell, but I guess, you know, it's 3 inches closer. So I'm getting there sooner. Which is helpful, but I honestly really haven't noticed a difference.
Yeah, speaking of, I guess, how are all of those little changes that have been added on in the past year, the past couple of seasons? What's your take on all of the different little things?
Some of them are good, some of them are bad. I'd say I do actually like the bigger bases, okay? It's easier to hit the base when you're rounding it. So, like, if I hit a double, I know I can hit the inside corner, and it's bigger to see, so you have a lot of guys who used to miss the base for some reason. We're all professional baseball players. I've done it before too, but we've missed the base and then we have to go back. But now it's like impossible. It looks like a huge pillow. The robot umpires, I'm like 50-50 on it. There's been times where it's like so far on the corner, the pitcher's missed by so much, you miss the human element. Like the umpire would never call that a strike. On the other hand, like a ball off the plate that's usually called a strike, you know, the robot umpire is basically like, no, you know, that's a ball. So it has its benefits and it has its, you know, doubts. But I think it'll be good if they fix it, like maybe just tweak it just a little bit, especially on the low pitches. sometimes guys throw curveballs and umpires would never call it a strike. Catchers catching it terrible and they call it a strike. So if they could fix that, I think it'll be good.
Have you found that the system that they use is pretty fair to either the shortest guy and the tallest guy, because that's, you know, different size strike zones depending on your height? Have you found that it's plays pretty true, you know, depending on which extreme you are, really tall or really short?
I was interested in that too. I know we played against Taylor Jones last week and he's like 6'7". I'm like, how do they do this? I know they measured us in spring training, our strike zones, but it's like when guys come down from the big leagues, do they have, cause I don't think they got measured in spring training. So what zone are they kind of going off? I don't know. I don't know if it's true to those guys. Like when Chris Bryant came down, did he get measured? There's no way. I don't think he got measured. And I know they were using like the robot umpires. So it's like, how is that fair for those guys who, you know, who are bouncing up and down?
I think part of his contract negotiation, there was a special stipulation saying, do not bring a tape measure anywhere near me to measure my strike zone, because you cannot send me down to AAA if you're paying me this money. So you might be right. You might be right.
For legal purposes, this is a joke.
Yes. Yeah. No. So the strike zone, normally we think of it as like kind of the knees to the chest or like the armpit. You know, there's different slogans and stuff. Where exactly did they measure that strike zone on you guys?
So I think we stood up first, they measured our height, and it was kind of like, you know, knee to the chest or like right under basically like the sternum. I think that was, everybody was different though. I mean, everybody should have a different zone because their height, like their torsos are smaller or torsos are bigger. So.
The more you know.
Yeah.
The more you know.
That's a strange one. Now you got a nice little abode there behind you, a nice home. That's something that I talked to Chad Smith about just before the All-Star break, is what's another one of the new things that's an off the field change and adjustment is the housing has been taking care of you guys. How much of a benefit has that been, you know, for you and as well as, you know, some of maybe your younger teammates who, you know, don't quite have the same experience as you or, you know, They're not quite the same Renaissance man that you are. How great is it having your housing taken care of, and it's just a big thing that's off your plate that you don't have to worry about.
It's definitely huge, man. It's like, I mean, I'm probably saving like $8,000 a year just from this housing, and that goes a long way over the course of the season. Because, you know, there's stuff that we want to buy during the season, whether it's batting gloves or bats. All that money, you know, we could spend more on baseball equipment. I know for me personally, every single year, every spring training, it's like I have 3 days to find a place. You know, I don't know where I'm going until the last day of spring training, and it's always a hassle. So it's been a huge relief, and I've had, you know, really no problems moving into this place. Maybe a couple on the first days, but after that, you know, I was all set. So it's been great.
3 days to find. That sounds so stressful. What is the most stressful housing situation you've ever been in where you're like, am I going to have somewhere to go?
I think I was in 2016. I was in Toledo. It was my first year in AAA. And a lot of the guys I played with were already older, so they had families. And I didn't understand. I was like, why are you guys staying with your family? Stay with your teammates, you know? And then I was down to like two or three guys, and we were all trying to look for a place. We were going place to place, and some of the places we were going to were just terrible, and we couldn't find anything. So I think we waited a full week, then we were on the road. We got back in town, and we kind of did the same thing. We were still looking for a place. We didn't have anything. And then by that time, I was paying out of pocket at a hotel until we found a place. So I think I spent like, you know, $500 when that could have went towards rent. But we ended up finding some place, you know, in downtown Toledo that was safe, good neighborhood. But it just took a while. And it's like we could have kind of tried to avoid all of that.
Toledo. I've heard nothing but great things about Toledo, though. So this is crazy.
I don't know what you heard.
No. The Toledo housing market. Yeah, there you go. Win Bernard, DMs may be open. I'm not sure, but reach out if you need a place. He's got some tips for you. I know it's been a while, but yeah. Still, yeah, it just seems like it's one less thing that you have to worry about. And if, you know, you got teammates and stuff who can maybe ship something to you, and it's just probably a better situation overall. And I even imagine that the team itself may have like you know, a copy of your keys if something happens, and they can kind of, you know, take care of any situation and stuff that's going on. So it's really a much more of a team effort, literally and figuratively, so that, again, it's not just on you to find a place with whatever other teammates are left behind.
It definitely is, man. I like the direction everything's going to. Like, this, you know, it should have happened a long time ago, but the fact is it's happening now. And so it's going to set us up for, you know, the players of the future who are just coming up. They're going to have no idea what we had to go through before.
That's a good thing. Yeah, I mean, I feel like this movement to make sure minor league players are properly taken care of has just gained so much traction over the past few years. I mean, how do you feel seeing all the support from people who might not even known about the struggles that you guys go through?
It's huge. I mean, I know that lawsuit a couple of days ago, I didn't read into it too much, but I know that, you know, there's a big payment that's supposed to come out, and maybe minor leaguers are going to get paid during spring training. I know me personally, it's been hard. Like, there's been times where, you know, I've had to ask my mom for money, especially early on in my career. Like, can I borrow some money? Cause I need to do this, this, and this. And then obviously after my first offseason, I worked, so I was able to pay for a lot of things, but maybe you guys can spend more time on their game versus having to work so much a different job. I worked in, you know, coaching kids, or I actually went back and coached my high school basketball team. But I know other guys, they might do like construction or janitorial work. It's like, it's not even related to sports, and they're over here grinding. So hopefully, you know, like if guys are getting paid a little bit more, it'll help out a lot.
Yeah, for sure. You guys grind for sure. So you deserve it.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, second half here. We'll let you get going here, Winton. But right, Second half of the season, I mean, you guys got some new dudes here in the clubhouse, and Sean Bouchard back in action, doing some big things. Valade, yourself. I mean, there's a solid roster. Jonathan Morales, a catcher who's, you know, I don't think he's gotten enough attention for how well he's played. Overall, I mean, you guys have a much improved club than last year. What can we expect from the Isotopes in the second half?
Let's see, a lot of wins. And we look at Warren Schaefer, and he kind of wears up his emotions too. Like, he's so humble about everything, but we know he wants to win. And he had a good talk with us in Sacramento after we lost a couple games. So I really like playing, you know, not only for myself and my family, but playing for my manager too and my teammates. So like, seeing his emotions on his face and how bad he wants to win, like, pushes me to want to win even further. And you look at our lineup, you go, like, the last game we played, I was like, this is dangerous. You know, like, every guy in our lineup, we're dangerous. And if we just put everything together, I think we're going to win a lot of games.
I love that. Well, make sure you tell Schaefe and Sushan that we said hello.
I definitely
let you off of this call.
All right, you guys.
Awesome. Hey, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Man, the best. Absolutely the best. I thought you were going to say, make sure you say hi to Brian Cranston and Aaron Paul this weekend. But
No, that, I went with the real stars. No, I went with the real stars, Josh Sushan and Warren Schaefer. Very, very, very good friends of mine.
That's it. I would have gone with Jeff Grammer. Again, that's I haven't talked to Jeff in a while, but he's another one of those Albuquerque stars.
Did I tell you my recent Jeff Grammer story?
No.
So I think it might have been one of the Zoom post games. It was a Zoom post game. I think it was after someone's rehab start, and I can't remember who.
Senzatella.
Maybe it was Senza. It probably was Senza. But I was in the call, got to see Warren Schaefer again. Of course, I know him from back in Hartford when he was managing the Yard Goats. So it was a lot of fun being in there. And then at one point, Jeff goes, he's asking like some question for some story that he's working on, but it sounded like he said, how do you feel about thongs at the ballpark? He was actually saying songs, but the way my face and Schaefer's face absolutely dropped, we're just like, what? And then he keeps like asking the question, and we're like, oh, you said songs, but like sheer panic for about like 10 to 15 seconds before we figured out what he was talking about. And it was hysterical.
Yeah. Schaefer's, it's funny because we think of the minor leagues as being a place for developing prospects and guys you're going to see up on the Rockies in the majors, in the outfield, at Coors Field and the infield, et cetera, et cetera. But like Warren Schaefer is legitimately as a very young manager himself. He's not even 40. I think he might be like 36.
I feel like he's like my age.
Yeah, he's young. He's so young. And he looks like a ball player too. That's the other thing too. He's in great shape. And so him and even Kristen Orfia down in Double A Hartford, like those, even the coaches, you got to kind of keep your eye on just a little bit because they are someone that could help contribute to the Rockies coaching staff going forward. Much like, you know, Zach Stevens, Ryan Konigsberg, Henry Chisholm, they're contributing to the Broncos beat right now over on the DNVR.com where it's only 50 cents for your first month. Man, training camp, it's here down in Dove Valley. It's going down. So get in the know on everything going down with the Denver Broncos. Of course, we got our guy, Adam Mattes, Harrison Wynn, doing it over there, covering the Denver Nuggets, the Avalanche. I mean, they've got a slew. I don't even want to mention anyone because I'm going to leave them out. They got like four or five folks over there crushing it. I will mention Maggie Angley because she was on our show. And people really love that episode, and that's got a lot of hits. I mean, we basically said, hey, here's the model for the Rockies, how to become successful based on what the Colorado Avalanche has done. And you can actually go back, check that out on our YouTube channel, DNVR Sports. But again, 50 cents for your first month at thednvr.com. And if you're ready to go all in, you get a free shirt from dnvrlocker.com. And you get some great access to the members-only Discord where we're throwing out trade proposals there in the Rockies chat. We're talking about different things. It's a lot of fun, and it's only at dnvr.com. When you're at home, relax with a Breckenridge Brew Avalanche Ale. They were so kind to give away all those tickets all throughout the playoffs, including the Stanley Cup. They're giving away gear. Again, that was all to support the drink of the season, Avalanche Ale. Look, when you raise Lord Stanley's Cup, it is your drink all year long. So make sure you support them because they support us. Breckenridge Brew and Avalanche Ale. As I said at the beginning, the action never stops on DraftKings Sportsbook throughout the summer. Beat the heat like never before with on DraftKings Sportsbook, a very special offer of a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's right. You make your first bet up to $1,000, and if it doesn't win, you get another shot to cash in. It's fantastic. Baseball, golf, MMA. Susie, during the pandemic, did you find yourself kind of dabbling in ping pong, of like Russian ping pong? All right, let me at least do like a little bit of research to see if I can make, like, did you get fascinated with anything of that, like that? KBO maybe?
You know, I was actually going to say not so much different sports, but my favorite sport being played in other places. I was very into KBO. I was waking up at like, you know, 4 a.m. to watch games. I enjoyed it so much, and I low-key miss it. They have fun over there.
For sure. And I think because, again, with baseball really being the only of the big four sports, Rapids, so they're trying to tease away a spot into the postseason. We'll see what happens. They're crushing over it at DNVR Rapids. But now's almost the time to dabble in some other sports, see what's going on. Super Rugby, we've got a rugby podcast doing all that. But you can get in on the action with all those kind of things and more when you download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Again, use promo code DNVR to make your first deposit and get a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's only with promo code DNVR and only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, Colorado only, new customers only, minimum $5 deposit, restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-522-4700. Susie, is Derek Jeter overrated?
We forgot to ask Quentin Bernard if he thinks Derek Jeter is overrated. Obviously,
we were thinking about it. He was I couldn't tell before we went on. We caught up with him just a little bit, but it was like, I couldn't tell if he wanted in on that action or not. I wasn't sure.
He was very diplomatic about it at least. So, okay. So I don't know how to answer this question, even though I knew that we were going to talk about this.
Love the honesty right off the bat. I'm already liking your take.
Right off the bat. I will say that living in Yankees territory for so long, like I lived in Connecticut for a long time, lots of Yankee fans there, lots of people obsessed with Jeter. I always say, like, I know like 15-20 people with dogs named Jeter. I don't know how you take your dog to a dog park or a ballpark for Bark in the Park when everyone's got the same name for their freaking dog. So, like, that kind of stuff annoys me, especially not being a Yankee fan. So, you know, I get annoyed by the hype, but at the same time, when you really look at what he accomplished during his career, it's like, he was good. I will reluctantly say it.
So the long and short of it is, and there's plenty of people out there that try to throw a little bit shade, not just my way, I think both of our ways, because mm-hmm. we are originally from the East Coast. We're not mm-hmm. natives, but it doesn't mean, you know, this is now not our home.
I know,
haven't taken this team as our favorite, and we've done our homework and we know the history and we've been here for a very long time. I've been here myself for almost a decade at this point. So you might be surprised to hear me say, is Derek Jeter overrated? Yeah, I think he is a little bit. I think he is a little bit.
Yeah. You know what? I feel like if you are saying it, that means you've dived into some numbers and maybe have some things to say about that. Do you have a spreadsheet related to
well, my
who's actually better?
My two real takes that relate to this is, one, saying Derek Jeter is overrated is an overrated take. Like, we've heard it before. We get it. I understand that part. But again, I also think that if you think he's so overrated that he's like not a Hall of Famer, then you're really kind of off the grid. It's an easy thing to dunk on because statistically wise, again, he has 3,000 hits. Like, that's kind of the be all end all of being a Hall of Famer. So that makes all the sense in the world. 3,000 hits, 14-time All-Star, 5-time Silver Slug Award winner, 5-time Gold Glove Award winner. Yes, I know the Gold Gloves were kind of BS a little bit, and that's fine. Now, according to JAWS, a really good system created by Jay Jaffe for, you know, basically trying to evaluate a player's career, only the 13th best shortstop of all time. So already you go, wait a minute, how can this guy be so legendary, but he's only the 13th best at his position? And it all just boils down to the intangibles. Like, his career is very similar to a guy like Barry Larkin, who did actually win an MVP award, got it over Dante Bichette there. Jeter just missed out. Justin Morneau ended up getting that. But it's all about the intangibles. 5 World Series, 7 World Series appearances, 158 postseason games. Susie, he played basically a whole season, extra season, over his career. And how well did he do? Batted .308, 20 home runs, 18 stolen bases, 61 RBI. Like, that is super important in the story mm-hmm. of Derek Jeter. And the bottom line, who else could you possibly even do a 6-part documentary about in baseball in the last 50 years? Who is interesting enough to even do this with? And I get it. That's all part of the overrated piece, because the intangibles also go to you know, him just doing it in New York. So that's worth bonus points that other guys don't get the benefit of. And that's mm-hmm. okay. I get that, you know, front and center on Saturday Night Live, Seinfeld, a couple movies, the other guys, Anger Management. Mm-hmm. So again, that helps raise the threshold and his Q score. He's really the modern day Joe DiMaggio is what he is. And you go back and look at Joe DiMaggio's numbers and you go like, oh, he was really good, but he probably wasn't even as good as Ted Williams. Also missed some time because he was in the service. Again, referring to Joe DiMaggio and not Derek Jeter. But there's a lot of intangibles. And again, growing up in the Northeast, I was very much tired of people talking about how great Derek Jeter was. You know, I'm not a contrarian by any means, but mm-hmm. like, I really thought, I'm like, oh my God, calm down, people. Like, about Derek Jeter.
Relax.
Yeah, calm down. Like, he's very good, but like, I was the first guy going, actually, I don't think his defense is that great. So I can acknowledge all of that. But is he overrated? Yes, I think a little bit. But that take in and of itself is a bit much. If we're talking about just the player
off
the field and all of those things and everything he's tried to do, even with the Marlins getting in on the ownership side, like there is a lot to this guy.
Oh, for sure. I mean, we're also forgetting all the supermodels he's dated. He's just like, he's a star.
I don't want to bring up the gift basket. I didn't want to bring up the gift basket business, but it's part of the lore, you know, as strange as it is. It's part of the lore.
It is. is. It is. Absolutely. Now, I know this becomes even more relevant with the captain. Have you been watching this? I saw the first episode. I've been keeping
no,
up yet.
No, I actually haven't even been watching it. No. No, I haven't.
I will say, so of course, you know, I grew up strongly disliking the Yankees. Those are stories for another time, or maybe for today. But I will say, watching that first episode, hearing the story of how he was drafted, I it touched my heart a little bit. Like, that was his favorite team. That was where he wanted to go, and he got it. It's like manifesting. I love that.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, again, you talk about dynasties in the last 40 years, and you go, okay, the Giants won 3 in 5 years, but it was that Yankees team in the late 90s, and there were a lot of guys. That's another piece, too, is that there were so many of those guys that were there. It was, you know, the core four, as you call them there, with Jorge Posada, Mariano Rivera, Hall of Famer, Andy Pettit, and Jeter. Bernie Williams is there. But then in 2009, they win it again. Derek Jeter is still there. He's still contributing. So there is a lot. He gave the media a lot to talk about. I mean, there's guys like Daryl Strawberry and Dwight Gooden, and you go, oh man, those 80s teams. Well, look at their numbers. You know, like, look at the longevity of their career. Did they have that? No. So Jeter had a little bit of everything. He was able to balance all of those things together. Not many people can do it. So if you want to do another Last Dance, like on Michael Jordan, but for baseball, who would it be from the last 40 years? Maybe Reggie Jackson, I propose, but I don't think he's a likable guy. I've heard many people having interactions with him. They've never been positive. I can remember my first memory of meeting him was in Cooperstown. I was 12 years old, and he was trying to buy some artwork. You know, it was before understanding celebrity a little bit, and then just being in a small crowd of people. And someone goes, Reggie, we sign a ball for this kid or my son? And he goes, absolutely. I'm signing over there on the corner tomorrow at 12 o'clock for $50. And it was like, whoa. Okay, Reg. Like, that was like my first introduction. Heard a lot of stories like that. You get it. Okay, it's fine. But he's not likable enough where you could even get that much content out of him. The two other players that I kind of came up with as like, maybe you could do some kind of documentary about, or I don't know that you could do a full series. I said Jose Canseco. Maybe. But how many people today actually really know a lot about Jose Canseco? I don't know that he bridges the generation gap. I think he's like one of just those names that people go, oh, I've heard of him, but I don't care about him enough. He's not brought up in enough positive ways when you talk about baseball. He's brought up more again in that celebrity status of wild players and that did wild things, but then did his career kind of follow that Hall of Fame trajectory? Probably not. The only other guy I could come up with, and it's really early now for the documentaries, but it would not shock me because of how much this guy is beloved. Jeter is both beloved and I think a bit hated, and that's fine. I understand why.
You got to be a little polarizing to be popular. If you're not polarizing, all right, maybe are you doing it?
I mean, maybe this guy it gets a pass. Maybe he isn't polarizing. I'm sure there's a contingency out there. Maybe they just haven't spoken up. But
okay, David, who are you talking about?
David Ortiz.
David Ortiz.
Yeah, he's very much loved.
He's not polarizing at all. He is. Yeah. Okay.
There are some Rockies fans right now going, "What? 2007? I hate him. Like, they just hate him for that." And I get it. And so there are going to be those pockets, of course. But like, the guy could get away with just about anything. And so he's very lovable in that capacity.
He is. And of course, I've loved seeing him get so much. We've seen so many fresh new interviews with him from the past, you know, week after all the Hall of Fame stuff. So yeah, he's got that million-dollar smile. That's another guy that I've heard a lot about, living in Boston for a while, living in Hartford. You know,
you might know more than me. You might have some more stories than I do, actually.
Actually, I mean, David Ortiz played. He was a Rock Cat for a little bit in New Britain, so he lived in Connecticut for a while. Thanks for tuning into our Connecticut podcast, everyone.
Yeah, no, people forget that he actually came up with Seattle, debuted, played parts of 6 seasons with the Minnesota Twins. Like you said, the Rock Cats, that was their affiliate there. So he knows his way around a pizzeria. That's why we got to tell you, because we know our way around a pizzeria. Got to check out Sexy pizza. Sexy.pizza is their website. Hand-tossed deck oven pizza made from scratch each morning dough. They got four in the Denver area, Capitol Hill, Old South Pearl, Jefferson Park, Park Hill. Sexy Pizza is as local as it gets. They're going on, I think, 14 years here in the Denver community, and they do an amazing job giving back to that community. When you go to www.sexy.pizza, go to their about page for the donations link to find out how Sexy Pizza can support your cause. They even got one down in Trinidad. So look, if you're away from home, you got to go to the southern part of the state, still feel at home with Sexy Pizza. And then when you come back up 15 minutes from downtown Denver, Green Mountain Dental Group have pearly white smiles like Susie and myself. We're looking sharp because they take great care of everyone. Whether you're a member of DNVR or not, Green Mountain Dental Group is trying to hook you up, because when you schedule a cleaning, x-ray, and exam with them, you're going to receive a free Sonicare toothbrush only at Green Mountain Dental Group. Susie, I do want to talk about Monday night's Rockies game, because there is a rumor that we are Rockies podcast.
There's a rumor.
But while we are on the topic of the Hall of Fame, and maybe we'll have to table some of this, I decided to go online to find out autograph prices, because that's a big thing during the Hall of Fame weekend, is all the Hall of Famers come back. They signed. There were 58 of the 78 living Hall of Famers were in attendance. And
good numbers.
Yeah, David Ortiz was there. And I don't often see the guys who just got in doing autograph signings. But Poppy had an autograph signing. You could even go and get a photograph with him and Pedro Martinez together. But my question to you, let's see if you've got your finger on the pulse. I don't know how you'd possibly guess it, but I have a feeling that you're going to be pretty close.
Okay.
How much money on the day after David Ortiz gets enshrined in Cooperstown, the Baseball Hall of Fame, how much money is he getting for his autograph?
I want to say he seems like a nice guy, a reasonable guy, but got to cash in on that moment. I would say $100.
Oh, turn her mic down, Kale. $300. $299. Yes. Yes.
Oh,
I think
wow.
Larry Walker might have been like 110. And again, he's a new guy, so he's getting a little bit more than, you know, on the lower end of the spectrum. I think like a Dennis Eckersley might be 50 or 60. So like that's what they get. But here's what I thought was interesting that I wanted to bring to the table.
Okay.
There were all kinds of options for inscriptions, because when guys will sign a ball, you know, you can, oh, could you write this thing on it or whatever? Mm-hmm. And sometimes they will, sometimes they won't. Sometimes you got to pay extra for that. And there were like, I think, 12 different things that you could get him to put on the ball. Some of them were kind of very pedestrian. 10-time All-Star. All right. David Ortiz, he's a 10-time All-Star. That's really like what you think about. All right. Last to wear 34. Okay, true. It's retired, but that's not like a thing necessarily that I've heard of. So that's kind of eh. 3-time
Unless
World
it's
Series.
Like, so, I mean, that's what I will want for my 34th birthday.
That's it.
The
yeah,
only time I could see that being relevant, but I'm
you didn't
sorry.
You didn't get one 4 years ago when that happened? Okay.
Not
moving
all.
On. Sorry.
I'm in my Larry Walker year right now, actually. So
there we go. I like that. 3-time World Series champ. Okay, that's fine, but there are other guys that would put that on a ball. So not, you know, special necessarily for him per se. And then curse reversed. Okay, I like that. Team did
like
it.
That.
Not him so much. That's okay. Now they're getting – now here's where it gets good. 2013 World Series MVP. Like that. Not too many of those guys out there. Big Poppy. He can sign up below. Okay. I like that.
Yeah.
541 home runs. Yes, an elite group. Hall of Fame 2022. Very common. Mm-hmm. Basic but classic. I think that's good. And I think these next two are even better than that. You
are
could get
weird?
Him to sign with the inscription – Boston Strong. I like that. He's remembered
like
for that. Mm-hmm. And then number one on the inscriptions that David Ortiz will sign on this ball that you are, you know, maybe you have to take a second mortgage on your home, reverse mortgage to pay $299 for. He will sign it underneath David Ortiz. This is our effing city.
Yo!
Is that crazy? I got hyped for that. I was like, that's pretty cool. That's
now
cool.
Effin, or like, will he actually write out the word
on the advertisement? It just said effin, so I think it might just be that. I'm wondering if the cash cow down the line is I'll actually spell that word out. And then you got to throw in another $75, whatever it might be. But I was like, that's kind of cool. I'm down with that.
I like that too. I mean, I'm a big fan of profanities. So that's right up my alley. Good for him. Good for him. Cash it in.
Yeah, absolutely. Why not do that? Kyle Freeland cashed in.
Yes.
The start of his second half. I wrote about it. You can get it over on the dnvr.com about kind of what Bud Black expects in the second half from Kyle Freeland, what Kyle Freeland's game is, because his game is not striking out guys, not being that power pitcher. It's getting ground balls. And yet, what does he do in Milwaukee to an offense that had already scored 25 runs in the first three games over the course of 16 hours? He goes and shuts them down for seven innings. I think it was four hits, one walk, seven strikeouts. Like, he was on his game. He was on one, and it was wonderful to see at just the right time when they needed him.
Oh, yeah. No, that win was so, so necessary, and it was so great seeing Kyle Freeland just absolutely cooking. I was so happy to see it. It reminded me of that 2018 Kyle Freeland.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah, that, I mean, and that's the guy that obviously he wants to try to get back to in some shape or form. And it was good to see that, because his last three or four starts, in fact, his last four starts, his ERA kind of started to creep up just a little bit. And so I think he needed that break. And so that was great to see him, you know, reset in that capacity. We'll see how well Edman Marquez resets here against the Chicago White Sox on Tuesday night against Michael Kopech. On Wednesday, we'll have a post-game show on Wednesday, Lucas Giolito against Antonio Senzatella. Do you know who's – I still have more about the game, but we're getting sidetracked in good ways.
I love getting sidetracked.
Do you know whose brother is going to be in the White Sox dugout? Or I should say White Sox clubhouse. What member of the Rockies 40-man roster is in the White Sox clubhouse? This is a good trivia pause for anyone listening to the podcast.
I have no idea, Patrick. Who?
Jimmy Lambert, brother of Peter Lambert. Yeah, your mic cut out.
Right?
There.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I was like, did I get his name wrong? Like, that would have been.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the older brother, believe it or not. Made his debut after Peter, but we know Peter's had those arm issues since 2019. And then Peter coincidentally made his debut in Chicago at Wrigley Field. So kind of the Chicago connections there with the Lambert family. One of the other things that ended up going down on Monday night, Daniel Bard, of course, gave Rockies Nation another heart attack, but got out of that situation. He is the light show. Folks, Daniel Bard is the light show, whether you like it or not. He is. Jose Iglesias left the game. I think he fouled the ball off of his foot.
Yeah.
I expect him probably have the get the day off on Tuesday. And Chris Bryant also having some foot issues. He's going to get checked out here in Denver. So we might be missing him in the lineup on Tuesday. For the first time, the White Sox coming back since 2017. And the last time they were here, they nearly got no hit. By Kyle Freeland, had the no-hitter into the ninth inning. What was the date? July 7th, I want to say.
Okay.
I was there. It's why, so if you get tickets, a friend invited me. I said, sure thing. Friend that wasn't even a huge baseball fan. But we were there. We went. It was hot. No-hitter into the ninth, and then Melky Cabrera broke it up, that SOB.
I was watching that game on TV. I remember it well. I did not remember the date because I'm not an encyclopedia like you. But yeah, good times back then. We'll see what happens in this upcoming White Sox series.
Yeah, they're scrapping a little bit. I spoke with Josh Nelson of the Sox Machine the other day, and I was a little surprised. Like, what's been going on with the White Sox? Like, the Twins are in first place. It's supposed to be the White Sox running away with this thing, kind of like they should have last year, and they did win the division, but they didn't really run away with it per se. And it does sound like when the Phillies moved away from Joe Girardi, the White Sox should have moved away from Tony La Russa, and they just haven't been able to get back on track. They've been a little bit banged up, but they sounded almost identical to the Phillies as far as what the defense is and in the outfield and you know, they've just got a bunch of big guys and they go station to station. The defense has been somewhat questionable. So that's kind of what you should expect from the White Sox. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if the Rockies end up taking two games here in this short set. And they're going to need to pad it, things a little bit here before the Dodgers come to town. Or are you of the mindset to want them to lose? Like, that's what's so strange. Like that's the tanking mindset, right?
Yeah.
You want them to lose, so it makes it a little more clear, a little more obvious, a little more blatant that the Rockies should trade some of their pieces away in order to get better for the near future or even 3-4 years down the line. And it's not going to be Marquez. It's not going to be – could be Marquez, but probably not going to be Marquez, not going to be McMahon. It's not going to be the guys that you're wearing. If you have a player's jersey, there's a 99% chance it's not any of those guys. Anyone that just came in that maybe you haven't even seen in person yet because you haven't been to the stadium this year, let that guy go. If they're going to be a free agent at the end of the year, go make a move.
But the question is, how many games do the Rockies have to lose in the next week for it to be obvious that they need to make moves? Because that's like the real question.
I mean, they could win for the next week, and I don't necessarily think there's enough there to say, you know, continue to go forward. Or that's the other thing, too, with this that I think is frustrating a lot of Rockies fans. If they go and, you know, what's the magic number here in the next six games? If they go 4-2. So they take two from the White Sox. They split with the Dodgers, and you go, hey, that was good. They split with the Dodgers. And, yeah, that's the word. That's the operative word. Good. It's not great. But they go 4-2, and you go, oh, maybe we should acquire players. Maybe we should give up players from our farm system to get better. And what? Maybe get two games as the third wild card. And again, that's if everything goes really right. It's hard because you don't want to give up on a season, especially when you have so much talent. And especially when you go and look back at that 2017, were they special before they started winning in September? That's the question. Now, the players, if you ask them, they felt that, you know, they were special. They felt that, and then it came together and they made the run, made the World Series. But I think if you were to ask teams from last year, if you were to ask teams from maybe 2016 and say, hey, are you guys special? They would have said, yeah. And those are teams that were below 500. And so they were wrong. So, you know, it's almost like, you know, how can you put your finger on it? How can you evaluate or equate chemistry, right? To know what the future holds. And at some point you just have to, you may need to just cut your losses rather than hope for the best. But that might be the unfortunate lesson that was learned in 2007 is, hey, if you stand pat, maybe things will just kind of work out and you just cross your fingers and hope. And I think there's a lot of Rockies fans out there that are frustrated because there very much is a strategy of cross your fingers and hope. If everything does break right, they'll go to the postseason rather than let's really try to create a window here in 2-3 years that you don't have to cross your fingers quite as much because now it just makes sense when you look at the depth of the big league roster. So look, we're not in the front office. We're not making those decisions. We're just going to have to wait and see what happens. And we'll be there. We'll be there in San Diego to kind of break it down when it does happen. Mm-hmm. Or when it doesn't happen, either way, something's going to happen. We'll have our takes. We'll want to hear what your takes are out there for the happening. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Get your,
that. I don't think get, that's anything.
No, definitely not. Yeah. Get those hot takes flowing and drop them in the members only Discord because we want to hear them. I drink hot takes instead of coffee. So feed them to me.
What's your sense on what the Rockies are going to do at the deadline? Do you see them trading nobody, one or two players or three? I mean, they've got about four or five that other teams are definitely coveting, I think would pay a fair price for, but I don't think they're going to go that high. What is your inkling right now on July 26th? 0, 1, 2, or -1 players, which means they actually acquire players. That's how that math works.
I just, from experience, I feel like we're not going to see anything. I would be inclined to guess 0. But maybe 1. Definitely, I don't see a lot happening. I don't think that's a hot take.
I think your instinct is correct, because it's been surprising. There's been times in which I ask other people that whose opinions I respect for their takes, and I haven't agreed with them. Mm-hmm. And I've been right, and there's other times I've been wrong. And this is a case where everyone keeps saying, no, they'll do something. They'll probably trade two guys, which, again, isn't enough to really move the needle. But my gut is telling me it will be less. So I have to trust kind of myself more than anyone else, even if it is a consensus. And so I think one is that right number. So you saying zero makes me feel a lot better about going with the one, reducing those expectations just a little bit. Unfortunately, I think it might just be one.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll keep an eye on things. Make sure we say our goodbyes to anyone who we think might be leaving.
Is that are we going to do that after every post game? Just say goodbye to a guy, just in case.
Okay, just in case. Goodbye. It was great covering you.
Will you be saying that to Chris Bryant today? Just in case? Or is that also part of his contract that neither of us has seen, and legally we have to say we haven't seen it and we're making that up? But will you be saying that, either contractually or otherwise?
You know what? I think you're going to see me going around to guys being like, hey, goodbye. It's great knowing you. Legally, this is a joke.
I'll have to see if I can get a little lipstick cam to see like the look on Bud Black's face and be like, me? No, wait, I listened to the podcast. You said it was only going to be players. Well, Susie, look, she ran with it. She's telling clubhouse attendants. She's talking to our homie Michael outside the clubhouse.
Oh,
just
my gosh.
Just in case, cover all your bases. I know.
Michael can't get traded.
Not
he's
our guy, Michael.
Too valuable. He's a former employee of the month.
Yeah, he's in the running for employee of the year, if you ask me. He's great. But and we're great. And so is our Twitter account, because we're going to have a lot of fun all week long. All week long over at DNVR_Rockies on Twitter. I'm at Patrick D. Lyons on Twitter.
And I am at The Susie Hunter on all platforms.
Man, we've got so much momentum here, but you know what they say about momentum. It's only as good as your next show. So we'll talk to you after Wednesday night's game.